From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are David Rennie, Washington Bureau Chief and Lexington columnist for The Economist, and Tim Mack, Senior Correspondent for The Daily Beast. And here are the issues, or I should say, issue, singular, and that issue is the November 8th election of a new president to succeed Barack Obama. The candidates, Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump, have been campaigning for months and met in three debates. Now the American people will decide. Well, David, let me start with you. Where is the race? Where does it stand? In my own view, and I'm reflecting what many others think, is that there's been a strong finishing kick for Donald Trump. The race is very close in the popular vote, but Hillary Clinton is a little bit ahead in the electoral vote, which really matters because you add up all the votes in every state. States get electoral votes according to how many members they have in the House of Representatives, which is based on population, and how many senators. So a state like New Hampshire has two senators and two House members, and they have four electoral votes. Anyway, every state counts it up that way. On that, I believe Hillary Clinton is a bit ahead.
You've got to look at the polls, and as you say, so in America, presidents are not elected by adding up everyone in America. Mm-hmm. It's not like a country like France where you look at the national vote. It's done state by state. And the truth is that this is a very divided country, and most states are not particularly close. This election, like all recent presidential elections, will be decided in, you know, half a dozen so-called battleground or swing states. And the campaigns have to guess, you know, which states they can afford to take for granted, which states they have to push for, whether they can expand the map, as people say, by pushing into the other party's favored states. And on that basis, at the moment, if the polls don't continue to tighten any further, Hillary Clinton does seem to have an edge in those really important swing battleground states. But you're also absolutely right that Democrats have had a very, very frightening week, because only really 10 days ago, Hillary Clinton looked like she might actually get quite a comfortable victory. She was well ahead in both battlegrounds, but also the overall national polls. The polls have definitely tightened, and they continue to tighten, and she needs that to stop if she is going to eke out a win here. What seems to have happened is Hillary Clinton's vote doesn't really seem to have moved very much. That's pretty stable. One of the big things that seems to have happened is that a whole bunch of Republicans who really didn't want to vote for Donald Trump might have told themselves they were going to do something like write in another candidate or vote for a third party. Something in the last few days, whether it's some of the recent news or whether it's the fact the election is so close, is making them think, I have to vote for Donald Trump. And so his numbers are going up and the third party numbers are going down. So Republicans seem to be coming home.
Tim?
Yeah, I mean, that's the message that the Trump campaign is bringing to voters, right? I was at a rally with the vice presidential nominee Mike Pence out in Florida, a crucial swing state. And his message was, look, we have to talk to our conservative friends and our Republican friends who aren't voting Trump and tell them it's time to come home. A lot of Republicans, especially moderate Republicans, have been repulsed by the statements that Donald Trump has made over the course of the last year and a half. And they have good reason to be. But at this time, I think a lot of people are making up their final decision. And their final decision, when they weigh Donald Trump's statements versus what they view as the illegitimacy of Hillary Clinton's actions, they're saying, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump.
Well, let's talk a minute about why we've had this closing, this tightening at the end of the race. My experience, I've covered a lot of presidential campaigns, is that the candidate who is behind and rallies late in the last week or two usually doesn't quite finish the job. Hubert Humphrey in 1968 had a strong finishing kick against Richard Nixon, didn't quite get there. Nixon won. 1976, President Gerald Ford running against Jimmy Carter, didn't quite get there either. Al Gore had a big rally in the last week of the campaign against George W. Bush in 2000. He actually wound up winning the popular vote, but didn't quite get there ultimately in the electoral vote. What has caused, David, Trump to gain? I mean, you've said who is, it is, I agree with you, it has been Republicans, particularly some I know, who were in the never Trump camp and they changed their mind. But what has caused this?
So I, like Tim, I've been traveling the country, going to rallies, going to Trump rallies, going to Clinton rallies, going to Michelle Obama rallies. Anecdotally, but also if you look at the polling, I think there's a couple of big things going on. One is, as the election gets really close, Republicans will say to me, you know, I was never a Donald Trump guy. I don't like Donald Trump very much. But the next president will choose at least one justice on the Supreme Court. That matters a huge amount to everything else that I believe in about, you know, conservative principles and abortion and all of those things. And so that is focusing their minds. We've also had some fairly nightmarish headlines for Hillary Clinton. And as so often with nightmarish headlines for Hillary Clinton, often the headline is slightly worse than the story underneath. This is the classic kind of Clinton story where it looks bad, it sounds bad, there's something not kind of great in there, but it's less for the moment than we seem. So what has happened? Listeners may remember there's been this long-running saga that when Hillary Clinton was in the government as Secretary of State and she was receiving emails that contained government secrets because she was head of the diplomatic corps of the United States, she set up her own email server at home. So that means that potentially she was breaking the rules on what you do with very secret information because she was running it through a private email system seemingly designed so that she could have more control over who saw her emails, you know, now and into the future. That has dogged her throughout this campaign, not just because it's against the rules, but it also feeds into the big doubt that people have about the Clintons, which is that they're sneaky, that they're secretive, that they think that the rules don't really apply to them. So it's a kind of perfect scandal for people who don't like Hillary Clinton. It had died down because the head of the FBI, the most important law enforcement agency in America, he had said in the summer that she had been extremely careless, but that there was no grounds to actually say she was a criminal and to start trying to prosecute her. But the end of last week, the same man, the head of the FBI, having told Congress that it was all done and dusted, felt obliged to say to Congress, I need to tell you we've found some more emails and we're going to be looking at them. But he didn't say much more. And so that was like throwing a lit match into a bucket of gasoline because the lack of detail, you know, set everyone running. We now know a bit more that these emails basically come from someone very, very close to Hillary Clinton, one of her closest aides, and in fact from her aide's ex-husband or estranged husband's laptop. We don't know what's in those emails. We don't know if there are secrets in those emails. We probably will not know until the election. But it means that the last few days, if you were very worried about Hillary Clinton, if you were trying to decide if you bring yourself to vote for her, you're seeing headlines that remind you all over again about why you think she might be sneaky and not obey the rules.
Tim, that was well described by David. And it seems to me that the Clinton campaign and Hillary Clinton herself have panicked in the face of these of what Jim Comey, the FBI director, revealed a week ago. And they really haven't been able to stabilize their campaign while, contrary to the way that Donald Trump has campaigned most of the year, where he'd go off on personal tangents and so on, he's been very disciplined in the last few weeks talking about real issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's a noticeable change. You know, I went to a rally earlier this week with Donald Trump, and he's talking about love and kindness. He's talking about we need to have respect in this country. You know, his wife gave a speech about how, as First Lady, she would focus on reducing online bullying. I mean, despite the fact that Donald Trump has been one of the worst offenders of online bullying anywhere in this country. But the tone of the campaign, they're trying to stress to Mr. Trump, is that he needs to stay on message, he needs to stick to the script, he needs to not go on these veering tangents, he needs to not attack Republicans, and read from the teleprompter for a week. And he's finding that, I think, a little difficult. But you're still seeing the tone shift pretty dramatically at Trump events. You know, he opens with an homage to his parents and how he wishes they were there. I mean, this is a side of Trump that we haven't seen the last year and a half, which Republicans probably wish they had seen from Mr. Trump the entire time.
Yeah, well, that is a Trump we haven't seen that much. This campaign seems to be so personal, and Hillary Clinton has made what she says is the unfitness of Donald Trump to be president her major issue. But she doesn't seem to have a collection of a mandate for anything in particular that she would do as president. David?
This is clearly one of the big problems with being essentially a status quo candidate. I mean, Hillary Clinton's big pitch, and I should say The Economist magazine this week, we've just endorsed her on this basis.
Let me ask you about that. Does The Economist usually endorse American presidential candidates?
Yeah, we endorse in every major election, and we have done since 1980.
You know what, The Weekly Standard, an American conservative magazine, we do not endorse.
Well, possibly, because if this year you'd had to choose on Donald Trump or not, you'd have had a huge fist fight inside the Wheatley Standard offices. So.
Indeed.
But not to dwell on private griefs. So Hillary Clinton is basically saying that with a bit more hard work and some committees that think hard about complicated policy, this country can be improved in this way, that way, this way, and that way. Her pitch is actually, the system isn't completely broken. We don't need to blow it up. We just need good people in the right jobs, and we can fix stuff here, there, and, you know, in different areas. It's actually true. It has the merit of being true that, you know, the system doesn't need to be blown up. There's lots that's right with America, and you do need good people in good jobs. And one of the reasons we endorsed Hillary Clinton is, although we think she's a bad candidate and although we are concerned about her, you know, emails and all those things, she is also closer to our positions on kind of boring things like the deficit and trade policy and foreign policy than Donald Trump is. And we think Donald Trump doesn't know what he's talking about, is promising things that he cannot possibly deliver, and would put bad people in important jobs. But you're right, it's not a very sexy message. So I went in the same kind of 2 days to a Trump rally and to a Hillary Clinton rally. The Hillary Clinton rally was really interesting because she was speaking side by side with Michelle Obama, the first lady. The crowd was much more excited by Michelle Obama because she was talking about the future. She was saying, what is on the ballot is the dignity of women. It's, you know, the hope for our children. Michelle Obama was pretty tough and pretty political and attacked Donald Trump. But her criticism was that Donald Trump seems to be uncomfortable with the idea of the future of America. That when he looks at a changing America, he seems to regret the fact that it's changing. He seems to be nostalgic for the past.
See, that's
and
a
her
pretty...
vision is that, you know, we should embrace the future. The future is exciting. Change is good. There's lots of positive things happening. Life is getting better for lots of groups of people. And that kind of message, while you're right, it's a negative message. She was kind of trying to say, you know, we are open to the future and embracing the future. That
That's
was
sort of a subtle
pitch.
Message for a campaign rally.
It got the crowd more fired up than Hillary Clinton.
She's a very attractive person, Michelle
she is.
Obama.
But here's an interesting thing. So I was at a university campus where that speech happened. I think one thing, we've talked about Donald Trump doing better, tightening the polls. One thing that is going Hillary Clinton's way a bit is when I used to, and I'm sure Tim found this too, when I went to university campuses a year ago, or 9 months ago, a lot of young college students, particularly women, would say they didn't like Hillary Clinton. They were much more excited by the left-wing rival Bernie Sanders. But the idea that Hillary Clinton was a woman, would be the first woman president, they were kind of, meh, you know, that's no reason to vote for her. Because Donald Trump has been so revolting about women over the last several months, he has put the dignity of women on the ballot. So now when you talk to young women, they're like, yeah, women's dignity is on the ballot. We need to vote for a woman president to show someone like Donald Trump a lesson. So I think Trump has done Hillary Clinton that favor.
Tim, before I come to you, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to remind listeners, this is Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today, Tim Mack of the Daily Beast and David Rennie of The Economist. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. This program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. First, is the Daily Beast endorsing a candidate for president, Tim?
I don't think we formally endorse, but I think if you read us...
meant formally endorse.
No, yeah. No, I don't think we formally endorse. Okay. But I think that if you read us, you'll realize that, you know, from the beginning of the campaign, a lot of our writers have opposed Donald Trump's rhetoric and his actions.
I had noticed that.
From the beginning. Whether it's his actions in business or the statements he makes about women or minorities.
Here's a question I want to ask you. Trump has alienated a lot of women, young women in particular, that David was talking about. He seems to have alienated Hispanic voters in particular and some other immigrant groups as well. How has he become tied in national polls with Hillary Clinton? Usually, a candidate running for president tries to add to his constituency, and it looks like Trump, in some ways at least, has subtracted.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's become, as time goes on, more of a conventional Republican, right? Not in terms of his views, but in terms of his base. I mean, he has this very fiery 10 or 15% of America, which is yelling, lock her up at rallies and forming the backbone of his support. But ultimately, one of the reasons he's going to get to, you know, 46 or 47% in America is because close to half of America would vote for almost any Republican, right? And we're seeing that now. The slice of America that decides elections is not very large, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8% of America, and critically in states like Florida or Ohio. So ultimately, when it comes down to it, Donald Trump is unlikely to win the election because he's unable to convince minority voters or Hispanic voters or women to vote for him, like suburban women in Philadelphia to vote for him. That's why the odds are stacked against him.
But he is tied in polls. Where all these people come from who are, they can't all be Republicans, David.
So something really fascinating is happening. So when the results come in, the overall numbers are going to look surprisingly similar to 2012. You know, one of them will win with like 65 million votes and one of them will lose with 62 or 63 million votes. You know, something along those lines is not outlandish at all.
And I think
that will be very, very similar to 2012. And the same states. And it could be very, very similar states.
Exactly. Trump has a very good chance of winning all the states that Romney won. There's really only one that's competitive now, and that's North Carolina.
Yeah. And so, but here's the fascinating thing that I think historians will be looking at is that those headline numbers, 63, 65 million, will hide enormous changes. That within those two voter kind of piles, millions of voters will have swapped parties. So millions of white working class or guys who didn't go to college, particularly men, will have left the Democratic Party and voted for the Republicans, which they did not do in previous elections. At the same time, millions of white university graduates, college degree holders, particularly women, will have left the Republican Party, having voted for it in previous elections, and swapped across to the Democrats. I mean, what's a really fascinating exercise is to look at the tracking polls for the last year and a bit and see who has moved around. And basically, one way of describing this election is that for most Republicans and for most Democrats, they've ended up treating this like more or less a regular election. Mm-hmm. They're voting how they always do. There's one group in particular that is fascinating because it really is saying this is not a normal election. This guy, Donald Trump, is not a normal candidate. And that is white women who went to college, who have a university degree. And that sounds like a kind of tiny specialist group. It's not. It's one in five voters in this electorate. And they have normally been exactly split between the two parties. So Barack Obama won them in 2008 very narrowly. Then Mitt Romney won them by about 6 points in 2012. So they swung back. This time, the latest polling, Hillary Clinton is winning them by a margin of 24 percentage points. They have deserted Donald Trump. And they live in exactly the swing suburbs that Tim was talking about, in places like the suburbs of Philadelphia, the suburbs of Denver, the suburbs of Richmond, Virginia. And they
suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, they cannot stand Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And they are stable. Their vote has been really stable. And they are saying, this is not a normal election. And if Hillary Clinton wins, they will be one of the big reasons that she wins.
Indeed. What about this, Tim? The Trump people believe this, and we've heard it all along, that there are shy Trump voters. In other words, they're voters who will not tell pollsters that they intend to vote for Trump. The question is whether this group exists or not and how large it is. What do you think?
I don't think the group exists. I mean, I think when you talk to someone who supports Trump, they make no secret of the fact that they support Trump. I mean, it's a badge of pride for a lot of Americans to support him. I mean, when you go to places in America, in swing states or in deep red states where there are Trump supporters, people are not shy about their opinions. I mean, this has been a very divisive election.
That's for sure.
And I think the people who support Trump, all their friends support Trump. I've asked this question a lot at rallies. You know, do you know anyone who's a Hillary Clinton supporter? I'll ask that to a Trump supporter. They say, not a single one. Right? There aren't that many
people.
What
about a Clinton rally? Does anybody say, oh, yes, I know some people for Trump?
No, but, well, I haven't asked that question at a Clinton rally, but Hillary Clinton herself has asked her supporters, talk to a Republican you know. Try to talk to them about the stakes of this election. So Hillary Clinton is at least making that appeal. Donald Trump isn't making that appeal. Ultimately, I think, you know, most Trump supporters are not shy people.
What do you think about this? In Britain, of course, you had shy Tories, or so-called anyway, in the 2015 parliamentary election and in the Brexit election. Is that possible here? I've always been dubious about it because we've heard in elections, I've heard in presidential elections for years, there's this hidden group of people that's finally going to vote. They were going to elect Barry Goldwater in 1964, for instance.
So I think the Trump campaign, when they make this claim, they're muddling two different claims. One is that there are people who are not showing up in opinion polls. Mm-hmm. Because when someone phones you up and says, what are you going to vote? They don't want to say Trump. Now, I think the problem for their argument there is that there's different ways of doing polling, including online polling, where you don't have to talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. And this difference just isn't showing up.
Yeah.
There's another claim, and that's what I think you're also mentioning, is this thing about, you know, that there's a hidden majority out there.
Yeah.
So people on the extremes of politics, and we heard this from Bernie Sanders on the left earlier this year, they have this idea that if you can just find an exciting enough message, which is pure enough, then all the people who don't usually vote will come out to vote, and there'll be a different electorate. The problem is that, basically, if you talk to political strategists who do this for a living, people who don't vote don't vote. I mean, a lot of them are the poorest of the poor. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to juggle extraordinarily complicated and chaotic lives. Some of them really don't follow any news at all. You know, there's an awful lot of people out there who don't vote because, you know, America, as a rich country, has very low turnout. I mean, that is one of the shocking things. So about 130 million people tops will vote in this election. There's 280 million adults in this country. So it's below 60% most presidential elections, I think, which is a shocking number when you think what's at stake and how very, very different these two candidates are.
You know, one thing I've noticed, and I'm not sure exactly what it reflects, and that is yard signs. There have been, I see practically no Trump yard signs, but I see very few Hillary Clinton yard signs as well. Normally, in a presidential election, the ones we've
seen
in the
past. You're talking about in Virginia.
I'm talking about wherever I've been, but particularly in Virginia, where I live, I just see so few of them. There used to be so many in presidential races, and I've tried to figure out what it is. I think it's just people that don't want to get in arguments with their neighbors, among other things.
You know, I think there are, in elections past, people could disagree about politics and they would say, well, you know, if the other person was elected, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But this election has been set up as an apocalypse for the side that loses, right? Mm-hmm. That both sides believe that if Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump is elected, it's the end of America. It's the end of the Republic. I think that's part of it. But I think also, you know, traveling around the country, I do see a lot of yard signs. And I see far more yard signs for Donald Trump than for Hillary Clinton.
Really?
Right? In swing areas. Mm-hmm. I see Hillary Clinton dominating the airwaves. You know, I was in Florida for 3 days. I heard countless Hillary Clinton advertisements on radio and television. Mm-hmm. But I see Donald Trump dominating on the streets of port. You know, people who just put up a sign in their yard or just, you know, make America great flag in their backyard. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of difference that I see.
I think the other thing is, you know, and this tells us, you know, because we need to look forward as well to what happens the day after voting day. As Tim has said several times, a lot of people think that these two candidates have no business being president. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why I think, you know, only the diehard supporters are wearing the hats and putting up the yard signs, because a lot of people think they're both pretty unsavory. And
this is a new phenomenon. We haven't had this.
No,
I
was at a Trump rally. I took my children, who are 12 and 13 years old, to a Trump rally because I thought this is history. They should see this. So I took them to a Trump rally and I sort of said to them, look, people are going to say lock her up. People are going to get quite angry with the press. You know, you need to be ready for this. So they were ready for that. Then there were people, and including they were sort of shocked by the fact it was kind of grandmothers and stuff, screaming, burn her at the stake. And that is not, they're not going to burn her at the stake, but how, you know, the day after the election, do you govern a country where half the country thinks that the person who won is utterly illegitimate and has no business being there? You are seeing now in tight Senate races, I think three senators that I have seen so far in North Carolina, in Arizona, and in Wisconsin have suggested that if Hillary Clinton wins, they may not allow her to appoint a Supreme Court justice. So they may spend 4 years trying to stop her appointing a new Supreme Court justice. You've seen the senator in North Carolina saying that his first order of business may be to impeach her. So she isn't even in the White House yet.
Remember,
and the Republican voters are licking their lips at the idea of sticking her on the witness stand and then impeaching her. This is not normal. This is really, you know, very serious for how much this country can be governed.
I agree with that. It is going to be tough. Certainly Hillary Clinton would enter the White House with a credibility gap. So many people distrust her, a solid majority of Americans, and this includes a lot of them who are going to vote for her, but they don't trust her, and there will be what used to be called a credibility gap. Well, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were David Rennie, Washington Bureau Chief and Lexington columnist for The Economist, and Tim Mack, Senior Correspondent for The Daily Beast. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Wagner Roberts and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.